Chapter 1. One phone call can change your life and perspective forever. I started writing this book from my perspective as a healthcare provider to empower others in navigating the business of healthcare. Ironically and unexpectedly, just as I was finishing the last chapter, I also became a cancer patient, recently diagnosed with amelanotic nodular melanoma. It's an entirely different feeling when you're on the other side as a patient and not the provider of care. The timing of this diagnosis is surreal to me. My husband Tony and I had finally started closing a couple chapters that were quite stressful and continued to hang over our heads financially for years as a result of my partnership and my old practice. We were starting to explore a few new exciting ideas with joy and anticipation. We were, for a brief time, starting to feel more simplicity and security in our life together. I am someone who had always put my patients and my job first. Medicine was, and continues to be, my calling. My family has always been important, and my husband also accepted and understood how much I care for my patients. Everything else could wait. Or could it? It's interesting to reflect on these last few months as I was consciously watching a growth on my right arm, and it did not seem that concerning, at least at first. Although it looked ugly, the lesion did not meet the criteria ABCDEs associated with the deadly skin cancer melanoma, so I thought it was likely benign and something that could wait. So that's what I did. Meanwhile, I had a little area on my face that wasn't healing, and that was the one I was worried about. My gut was telling me that the spot was squamous cell carcinoma, which it was, and that I would be diagnosed, have Mohs surgery, and I was going to be fine. I continued in observation mode when it came to addressing my right arm lesion. It was symmetrical, round, with nice even borders, skin-colored, and still less than the size of a pencil eraser. Excuses kept getting in the way of taking the time to schedule an appointment. I really felt the worst-case scenario was that I would have a biopsy and have a Mohs procedure, and that would be it. It was early January, and we were going through lots of changes in my new job with Premise Health at Insight Enterprises. We rebranded our clinic, and we accomplished serious growth in the last few months' time. I was so excited and proud, as the clinic was vibrant and patients were getting the care that they deserved. I had put best practices to use from 20 years of building practices, and it worked. At the same time, we had major staffing changes, and we were preparing for the launch of Epic, our new EMR, or electronic medical record. Within the last few weeks of March, the arm lesion grew bigger and uglier. The D and E portions of the ABCDEs now applied. The lesion was growing fast and was bigger than the tip of a pencil eraser. I had a patient in the office with a similar lesion on his arm, and I referred him to my dermatology group, Skin and Cancer Center of Arizona. After his biopsy, he was diagnosed with a nodular basal cell carcinoma. I wondered at that point if perhaps my lesion was also basal cell, as it looked so similar. Even if that were the case, I thought it could wait. I felt well. I was just a little tired, but that was to be expected with longer hours and everything going on at work. At the same time, I've been charging ahead to complete this book, driven to share my 20 years of knowledge and medical experience to advocate for others so that they can feel empowered and have great healthcare experiences. No matter what, I was going to get my book published by early this year. I had procrastinated long enough. During this time, I also launched my Ask the PA show, Best of Health at PBRX Radio. Great people and stories were being showcased. I continued to be so excited and even launched our dementia show the day after I had my biopsies. Today, as I continue to advocate for myself, I have to thank my husband Tony, who insisted I go to the dermatologist. Tony made the appointment, and there were no openings until May. 4 days later, I had an appointment after texting my amazing friend and dermatologist PA, Beth Lopez, at Tony's insistence. I'm grateful to Beth for her compassion and willingness to see me for an evaluation so quickly. That very appointment may have saved my life. Let's talk melanoma. Less than 2% of the population will get melanoma, and I was diagnosed with a rare form called amelanotic nodular melanoma. This form of melanoma accounts for less than 8% of all melanoma diagnosed. Unfortunately, this type has a different appearance from other types of melanoma. Amelanotic melanomas are missing the pigment typical in most melanomas and can resemble other types of skin cancers such as basal cell or squamous cell carcinoma, and unfortunately may be mistaken for benign moles, warts, or cysts. I beat myself up a bit for being so naive, as I diagnosed many melanomas over the years. This was different, but no excuses. As for my skin cancer risk, I did get a lot of sunburns and blistering as a child growing up at the Jersey Shore. I never really was a sunbather, and I use sunscreens most of the time. I have attempted to keep covered up while out in the sun. We have friends in Mexico, where we visit frequently, and they have asked why we were so white living in Arizona. Some would tease me about my lack of showing skin to avoid the sun. Despite that, it still got me. My journey so far. Once diagnosed, I met with my oncologist, Dr. Sujith R. Kalmadi, at Ironwood Cancer and Research Center. He went through my reports and ordered labs and a PET scan. I was also referred to Dr. Mark Runfola at Advanced Surgical Associates. He explained what to expect and told me that I had a 1 in 4 chance of metastasis to my lymph nodes. Just to be sure, along with a wide excision of the cancer, he would remove 2 to 3 nodes from my axilla, or armpit. The next week, I had surgery. My surgery went well, and I was left with a 7-inch long scar on my arm. This will serve as a not-so-gentle reminder of this life-changing moment. The PET scan has confirmed that at this point, the cancer has not spread throughout my body, and this brings me hope. The next step was finding out whether all the cancer had been removed and whether my lymph nodes are negative. The following week, I had the Mohs surgery with Dr. Joseph Janik at Skin and Cancer Center of Arizona and plastic surgery closure with Dr. Jennifer Bowl in Tempe. These procedures went as expected, and I am healing nicely. That same day, I received a phone call from Dr. Runfola with my results. The good news was they got all the cancer at the original site. The tissue around it looked good, and the lymph nodes looked small and healthy. But 2 of the 3 were positive for microscopic metastasis, less than 1 millimeter. I wanted to cry. Now what? In the back of my mind, after a lot of research, I thought to myself, even if the doctors tell me I'm okay, I wonder about that one rogue cell that can potentially multiply and wreak more havoc someday. As I tried to take this in, I found myself thinking, I am the 1 in 4, and now I'm officially stage 3A. We chatted a few more minutes, and after all my data was run through a risk assessment tool, the results showed that I had an around a 30% chance of recurrence of this cancer somewhere else, or a new cancer. All I could think was, now what? I called Dr. Kalmadi and had lots of questions. I was not going to wait 2 weeks to ask. I was in advocate mode for myself. He most graciously saw me and let me know that as a result of this, I would qualify for immunotherapy. I had read so many articles and also stories of people's journeys. The thought of doing nothing other than 3-month screenings, scans in a few months, and waiting, to me was a guarantee I would likely in time be diagnosed with metastatic melanoma, and that was not an acceptable plan. I was informed that the FDA approved immunotherapy for those at stage 3 advanced melanoma. The results of the trials had been very encouraging, and so I am excited to have the opportunity to have this therapy. I was placed on Opdivo. It was specifically helps your immune system attack and kill the cancer cells while protecting your healthy cells. I have had 11 infusions to date, and so far, so good. This medicine is also helping people with specific lung cancers and other cancers with impressive results. This newer therapy is bringing many people hope and longer survival rates. Fingers crossed that it will do the same for me. I'm beyond grateful for the treatment I've had so far, and I'm confident that close follow-up and these therapies will save my life. I am tough, and I'm a fighter. I also believe there's so much more to be done, and this setback has motivated me even more to try to help others get the best care possible, whether you are a patient, advocate, or provider. I am so grateful for the wonderful care of my melanoma team. Tony, Beth Lopez, Dr. Neil Fernandez, Dr. Mark Runfola, Dr. Sujith Kalmadi, and their amazing staffs. I really hope you learn a lot from my book and follow my journey, as I truly believe I can be an influencer for change. As I reflect on my very first Ask the PA video, my topic was the importance of having access to some form of health insurance, whether you're in the United States or elsewhere. Part of this book delves into insurance, and I'm experiencing firsthand the importance of having catastrophic health insurance. I'm also a huge proponent of the health savings account, HSA plans. My HSA plan had a $4,500 deductible, and my maximum out-of-pocket expense is $6,500. In less than 1 week since my cancer diagnosis, I have blown through that amount, and I'm grateful that my insurance will cover a majority of the rest. If it weren't for health insurance, Tony and I would be in financial ruin. Here's to you and your best of health. I hope you enjoy my book. Chapter 2, Helping You Survive the Business of Healthcare. Knowledge is Power. I am a physician assistant who has been caring for patients for over 20 years. Family practice, cradle to grave, is my specialty. Following the footsteps of three generations of family practice physicians, my father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, this was a natural and genetic calling that I am deeply proud of. Given this, I have a unique perspective, and it's time to share that information. Throughout this book, I want to give you glimpses of those events from my childhood that influenced my approach to healthcare and shaped who I am today. As a healthcare provider, teacher, business owner, patient, and advocate for my family and friends throughout the years, I have been painfully aware that there are disconnects with the current state of healthcare in the U.S. and throughout the world. It can be confusing and, frankly, very scary. My goal through this book is to provide information that will empower you to make better healthcare decisions for you and your family. I want to help you navigate through a confusing system, get the right answers, and share ways to save money and time along the way. Helping you prepare for the unexpected is also a major focus here. I aim to offer thoughts and opinions based on years of my experience and passion. Sharing information for dialogue and discussions may change how you think and approach your health moving forward. Educate, empower, and execute is the ultimate goal. Here's to your best health. Chapter 3, Following in My Dad's Footsteps. My dad was the third generation of physicians, as my great-grandfather had been a medical missionary in the early 1900s. My grandfather, Mom's father, had a practice out of his house in Yonkers, New York. His plan was to have his son-in-law go back to New York after medical school and practice with him. That was not my mom's plan, so after residency, my parents landed in a small, southeastern Pennsylvania town, Coopersburg, with a population of around 1,800. My dad recalls the struggles he had setting up his practice on Main Street and having a hard time finding financing. The Coopersburg Bank was also on Main Street, but they did not want to deal with him, so he ended up getting a loan for his startup from a bank in Quakertown, which was only 5 miles away. He remained very loyal to them, as they gave him the break he needed so he could serve his community. As his business became successful, Dad said that up until the day he left his practice, he was approached by the bank on Main Street, but he always said no. He was a very loyal man. It's funny, because when my business partner and I opened our practice in 2003, we ran into the same situation. Years later, when our practice showed financial stability, many commercial bankers reached out and wanted to do business. An example of how certain aspects of business do not change. Best of health. A glimpse into our not-so-sleepy town. Our town, Coopersburg, Pennsylvania. Like most quaint towns in the 70s, we had a volunteer fire department and a funeral home. We also had Mac the mayor, Officer Schneider, and my dad. Whenever anything was going on in our not-so-sleepy town, these three superheroes were usually the first responders before the rest of the volunteers were aware there was a problem. Mac the mayor was also the town barber. Cop Snyder was head of the local police department. Dad was one of two town docs. My dad's office, the local grocery store, hardware store, hotel, bar, and a barbershop were all located along Main Street. Whether the activity was preparing for a local parade, carnival, soapbox races, or other town events, they all worked together to benefit the rest of us. Kids felt safe, and we were all protected. My parents slowly built their family practice with Mom as the bookkeeper, and other than part-time nurse, my dad had no other employees. They remained very discreet about anything related to the families they served. Patient care and confidentiality were the priorities. We even went to church in another town, and they did their best to keep our lives, as a family, separate. In those days, HIPAA did not exist, and health insurance was still evolving. People without insurance were charged a fair price or bartered for services rendered. In some ways, it was so much simpler. Oh, how things have changed. Chapter 4, Why I Love Being a Primary Care Provider, PCP. Scenario: Mary was seen in the ER and also cardiology for heart palpitations. She was cleared by both specialties after evaluation. She referred herself to me because she did not feel well and proceeded to tell me her symptoms such as anxiety, weight loss, loose stools, and her heart would race at times. Throughout her course of care, one would hope that someone had checked her thyroid. Sadly, no one had. After her appointment, I ordered a thyroid panel and also thyroid antibodies. Upon review of her lab results, I diagnosed Mary with hyperthyroidism. We discussed that this could be concerning, so she agreed to a thyroid ultrasound as well as some additional studies. Her final diagnosis after a thyroid biopsy was thyroid cancer. Following appropriate treatment, Mary has been cured. I love being a primary care provider, as I get to care for people from cradle to grave. I specialize in preventative medicine and also pride myself on being a good diagnostician. Back in the day when my father and those before him practiced medicine, there were not so many specialists out there to work with. Today, we have so many levels of specialty, it is mind-boggling. As the PCP, not only am I able to help you with a lot of your medical problems, it is also my role to advise on the correct specialist to see. Many times over the years, I have had referrals from specialists because the patient had no PCP. If these people had seen me first, they potentially could have saved money and in some instances avoided the specialist altogether. This is why I love my job. A glimpse into our not-so-sleepy town. Medicine as seen through a child's eyes. Imagine the early 70s, living in a home where Dad's office was on the first floor and my bedroom was right above the front door. There was only one other local doctor, and between the two of them, they cared for a few thousand patients in our town and also other nearby communities. Our residence on Main Street was not the only location of my dad's practice, but it was our family home. Friends and relatives gathered for social occasions, and I would have sleepovers with my friends. Imagine back then being a kid and hearing the doorbell ring in the middle of the night. Dad would get up to greet whoever was at the door, and I remember hearing the familiar phrase, "Hold on 1 second, I'll go open up the office." My father not only saw patients from cradle to grave, he also delivered many babies along the way. Quite a few holidays went by with Dad nowhere to be found because he was at the hospital delivering another baby. We would postpone celebrating Christmas until he arrived home, with the exception of Mom letting us open one gift in the morning. The rest would wait to be opened until Dad came home. He sometimes had to leave to make a last-minute emergency house call, and we would wait for Dad before leaving for whatever occasion as a family. Mom was amazing in the way she supported him and us no matter what happened. No day was ever the same. Their norm for us was adapting to the needs of the patients and Dad's practice. His practice consisted of a part-time nurse and my mom, his bookkeeper. He also made house calls daily and spent hours following up on any of his patients admitted to the hospital. My father charged $9 for an office visit and never demanded payment the day of service. My mom's bookkeeping system was a file with cardboard charts. Back then, if someone did not have cash, Dad also accepted chickens, fish, and food, and even bartered for a lot of services around the house. From the beginning, my parents worked very hard, but my mom made sure that we all, as a family, played hard too. We were involved in school activities. For me, it was horses, golf, and music. We took routine vacations and enjoyed time at the shore. A tradition I loved took place on President's Day weekend. We drove to Atlantic City and stayed at a hotel on the boardwalk. We would walk the boards in our winter coats, swim in the heated pool, and have dinner at the same restaurant year after year, where we enjoyed Italian food and had the best cheesecake ever. Traditions like that kept us grounded as a family.